This is the Empowered Caregiver Show. If you are a caregiver or know someone who is, this show is meant to uplift you through education and support, while also lifting up every caregiver's invaluable role in society. Now, here is the Empowered Caregiver and your host, Liza Helen Brand.
You are listening to Liza Hallenbrand, and I am your host of the Empowered Caregiver Show, and I cannot wait to jump in. I am going to be joined here today with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. However, she does not cover just Madison. We're going to talk about that right out of the bat, the coverage area and all the great work that she does. I've had Robin on, I think this is the third time, because she has such amazing wisdom, and I just said this to her earlier today. Such a peaceful and calming presence. So can't wait to share everything that she knows about relationship therapy. I know when it comes to being a caregiver and being in a relationship and having a relationship and finding relationships, it can be extremely challenging due to the caregiver role. And I think it's inevitable to have some differences and conflicts. And we're going to talk today a little bit about how trauma impacts relationships, and also some of the key factors to good communication. I mean, communication is key, and it's just something that, you know, we're not really taught. And to be honest, probably many of us didn't have super great role models in that relationship and communication role. So I'm going to jump right in. Robin, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me back. Good to be here.
Yes. Okay. So before we talk about the work that you do and how you can help people, I just want to spend some time talking about you. So first thing, Relationship Therapy of Madison, but like I said, it's not just Madison. Can you tell me a little bit about who you're able to work with and how you work with your clients?
I am, you know, based in the Madison area, but I see clients from all over the state through telehealth. I work with couples almost exclusively. I do ask that couples, this is a detail, that they're on the same screen, right? So even though I'm not in the same room with them, I'm watching body language, we're having conversations where they need to be able to see each other. So that can happen from anywhere. And only in the state of Wisconsin based on my licensure.
That makes sense. So I had talked to you a little bit this morning before we had this conversation now. And I asked, what do you do in the therapy setting when not both partners are on board? You know, if there's one person that's really not down with it. And I loved your answer. Can you tell about your initial phone call and what you're looking for and what makes a successful
therapy experience?
Yes.
I have a free consult. It usually runs about 15 minutes. And I ask that both partners be on that call. And that is a little bit of a weeding process, in the sense that if both partners are not able, ready, willing to be on a call together and also speak on the call together, then they may not be quite ready for therapy. And so that does eliminate the sort of stereotypical one person dragging somebody else. You know, that's not to say that both people are equally gung-ho, but right. it does sort of give me a baseline that both people are willing to participate. And typically I earn their trust through that process, in part because you can imagine that if I did have a phone call with one of them and then we started sessions together, you know, then the second person might feel like they're sort of behind the eight ball already.
Sure.
Right? That a relationship of some sort has already developed with me and the primary person. So in part it's for me to assess their readiness, but it's also to make sure that they know that I'm going to be an even-keeled supporter for each of them individually and also for them as a couple.
Well, and you know, I have a lot of respect for you for taking that time and making sure that it is a good fit, because, you know, I know that you've mentioned you don't want to waste people's time. And, you know, some people may need to take a step or two before they're ready to start with you. So I think it's a real valuable service that you provide to be able to meet each person together and make sure that it's a good fit. And then I also talked about insurance, because I feel like that's the second question, you know, maybe the first question that comes up in people's mind. And again, you had just a beautiful answer about, you know, not only the insurance world, but why you do what you do. So I want you to share a little bit about how somebody can work with you and if you accept insurance.
Right. So the answer is no, I don't take insurance. And there's a few reasons for that. The main reason is that most insurers do not cover couples therapy. In that, the industry is built on therapy provides services for people who have medically necessary needs. And so an individual who has whatever it is, anxiety, depression, or something maybe even more complex, you know, we can write down what that code is. And as a therapist, and we can say, I'm seeing this person for this need. They are progressing, they are not progressing, right? So that we're measuring against, you know, some baseline about how they were doing. So in when we're talking about a couple, there's not really a way to give a couple a diagnosis. You can't say this relationship has this diagnosis. I mean, I might have theories, but that's not the same thing. So for someone like me, who, like I said, almost exclusively sees couples, I feel like it's in my best integrity to just be really clear. I see couples, and couples are just not covered. Now, some of my clients are seeing individual therapists, so they are using their insurance already. And they most likely wouldn't be able to, quote, double dip if they wanted to find a therapist that would work with them. Now, I'll step back for a second. If I was an individual therapist, and there are many that do this or some that do this, I might be willing to see a couple together, either initially or maybe after working with one of them. But the difference is that the goals that come from in my work are about the couple. They're all about the couple. There may be some individual goals in there because we can only control ourselves, and that's another whole story, so that how we structure the goals. But when we go to an individual model, if we bring in another person, a partner, then what I found in a variety of experiences is that the individual that comes in is the identified client, they have a diagnosis, and everything is oriented toward that goal for that, or those goals for that individual. So it's structured differently. Can it be effective to use insurance? Absolutely. I'm not saying there's anything against that. It's not the way that I feel works for the because I'm doing almost all couples work.
Right. And that really gives you the freedom and the ability to do what you do best and not try to, you know, meet whatever the insurance company puts on you.
Right. And that's the other thing. So this is a big discussion, you know, among therapists is, you know, at what point is therapy medically necessary? And if you take insurance, you're driven by that. And if you're not, then you can work on all kinds of things. You know, we go through all kinds of life transitions and things that really make life challenging, and we'll get to trauma later, you know. And so some of those are diagnosable and some of them aren't, right? And so I don't have to please anybody. I don't have to cater what I do to an outside source. The other thing is, and this is mentioned on my website, that, you know, we invest in ourselves in lots of ways. We take care of our car, we get the oil changed, we get our hair cut, we have pedicures, manicures, whatever we do for self-care. And this is self-care. This is care for the relationship. So I know that it's not accessible to everyone to, for example, to see me, but there are other, you know, there are therapists out there that have different ways of charging and things like that. So I'm not trying to make it an elitist experience. I'm just saying that I want people to stop and think that this is kind of like that.
Yes. And I like how you said that. It's not an elitist experience, but you need the ability and the freedom to do what you need, what you know how to do and what you're trained to do and what's really going to help couples. Right. So I appreciate that you are doing that. I'm speaking with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. And what else?
I wanted to just add that one way I give back to the community is that I provide references and networking with other therapists. So if I'm not the right therapist, or even if someone's looking for an individual therapist, that's the way I give back to the community.
And you know what? We talked a little bit more about your giving back and some other things that you do that I just found fascinating to me, because it just brings in your calm, grounding presence, which you know has to be so helpful in working with you. Can you tell listeners a little bit about the story that you shared with me with your outside dance group?
Yeah, so I'm a leader in the practice, I would say, of the Dances of Universal Peace, which is spiritual practice. It's not a particularly religious practice, although it has roots in Sufism. It's a practice that involves and includes it's multi-denominational. It involves different mantras and song and movements, and it allows us to come together and dance and move in a circle and raise our voices together. And it's a practice I've been involved with for about 30 years at this point. I believe that it gives me a sense of groundedness. It helps me kind of get rid of the noise, as any meditative practice would do. And it reminds me of our heart-to-heart connection that we have with everyone, you know, or that we can have with everyone if we choose to.
Well, and I thought it was so fascinating because you had said that you've been doing this now for almost 30 years.
Yeah.
And some of the people you see every year, but you don't know where they work or what they do because you're not there for that.
Right.
You're there for the connection, mm-hmm. right? Wonderful. I'm just trying to think, what else do we want to get out there about you and your practice? Because you're currently accepting new patients?
Yes, I am currently accepting new clients. My sessions are a little longer than average sessions. So individual sessions are typically 50 to 60 minutes, more likely 50. And I see clients as a couple for 75 minutes, which is 50% more, actually. And I find that it gives me enough time. It's sort of a sweet spot for attending to each person as well as the relationship as a whole.
I think that's a great idea because I've had my fair share of therapy, and you're right. Sometimes an hour is too short. You just get to that spot and then the time is done, and then you have to wait. And then of course you're right. You don't want it to go too long because too much of anything is not the best. So that's awesome that you've done that. I don't think I've ever come across a therapist or another provider that is willing to give that extra time or schedule their sessions in that way. Anything else that listeners should know if they are considering working with a marriage therapist?
Yeah, so I have a licensure as marriage and family therapist.
Okay.
And people might want to know that, you know, that's different than a social worker or a licensed professional counselor. You know, individually, any one of them could be really good at it. But typically, marriage and family therapy, because we're trained in systems, which we could talk about more if you want, but systems, this idea that we're a unit and there's ways that things impact each other, I think gives a really strong base. So, you know, if it were me, I would say maybe look for a marriage and family therapist.
Will do. I'm speaking with Robin Schnitzel from Relationship Therapy of Madison. We will be back more to learn about the great work that Robin does. Listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. I'm here today with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. And so I was just asking Robin a little bit about the therapy process, how do you get started, and how a marriage therapist is different. And I want to go back to that just a minute because it really made me think, oh yeah, you said you're dealing with a unit. You're how to make a relationship work. That is a lot different than meeting somebody one-on-one to talk about, you know, individual therapy. So is there anything else that you want to add to that?
Right. So the roots of family therapy come from systems, with this idea being that, you know, if something happens to one part of the system, it affects the whole system. So for example, you know, if you someone in the family becomes disabled and now there's caregiving involved, for example, you know, things shift, right? It's not just that one person is now functioning differently. The whole family needs to adjust, or usually needs to adjust, or maybe can't adjust, right? And so it's not that other, you know, professionals aren't thinking about that, but we're holding that like really at top of mind. And how is that affecting all the different pieces, including things like siblings, including resources, including, you know, what happens when you go to your community and now you have someone who's not able to move as easily. Like, there's just, it just becomes such a big conversation. And even if we don't talk about all of those, I'm trained to be like holding all of that and supporting all of that and maybe bringing some of it to light. Because these are the kinds of things sometimes So when someone leaves for college, we can totally feel that. We know what that's like when our kid leaves for college. But there's other kinds of changes that we may not be really like understanding what the impact is having, but I might be able to see it be playing out, right, in the relationship dynamic.
Right.
I can't give, you know.
Yeah. Well, you, I mean, that's where your training is at. And that's not always the case for all therapists, if I'm understanding you right. They don't have that specialized training in the unit. I want to go back to caregiving just a moment because, you know, I said caregiving can be really hard on relationships. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it can't be. I'm sure there's some people out there that don't struggle, but I think most of us, it impacts relationships. And you are very familiar with caregiving. You're maybe too familiar with caregiving. You have it at every single angle. Yeah. So you can really relate to those caregivers. Would you want to share any of your multiple, right, caregiving stories or responsibilities that you're currently dealing with yourself?
Yeah, and I think I'll also add how I think it can show up in my relationship, too.
Sure.
So I have a parent with Alzheimer's who lives about 900 miles away, but I'm her primary caregiver. I have a brother also about 900 miles away who needs additional support based on his level of functioning, and I have a daughter who has a whole variety of challenges. There's a lot pulling at me. And I would say that probably other caregivers experience this. It comes in waves. It seems like there's times when I'm just like full up and there's just all these things that have to be done. And that affects my relationship, my primary, you know, my marriage, because, you know, like my partner kind of like feels me disappearing and I feel myself like just like I almost like enveloped by the tasks at hand sometimes. And so I think that some of the things that have worked for us are both him understanding that sometimes it's just like that, and also me noticing more often when it's like that and doing my best to make spaces even when that's happening. Because when it first became that big, I would got into that space and it would be hard to get out of it, you know?
Yeah.
And so some of it is my own self-monitoring of it.
I like that self-monitoring. So you, you look after our support, your mom, so a parent, a sibling, and a child. Mm-hmm. So you have seen it from all angles. And you said when it comes to relationships, you have to find time to make that space or create that space. Can you go into that a little bit more? What does that mean? What does that look like? And when you are up to your neck in caregiving responsibilities, how do you do that? I hear time and time again when I talk to people and I say, you've got to do self-care. It's critical. It's essential. And they're like, I don't have time.
Yeah. So I might've mentioned this on a prior episode. I was advised, if possible, create a circle of support around the people that you're caregiving so that you're not the only one. You may still be the primary person in charge, which is the case in a couple of my scenarios, but this idea that there's going to be other people that can step in. So that allows, when I get to those moments where I feel really full up, you know, I can ask myself, can I delegate any part of this to somebody else? The other thing that I ask myself is, I don't know what it's like for you, but I can get really, really focused on, okay, all these things are going on for this person and I want to do all of these things to attend to them. But if I really step back and say, which things need to happen today or this week versus, you know, could they wait? Sometimes the answer is no, but often the answer is yes. And that means that I have to pick it up and put it down more often, which sometimes is harder than just sort of plugging through. But it may not be in my best interest or my partner's best interest and or the person I'm caring for best interest, right, if I'm running myself too far into the ground or little resourced, if I just kind of keep going.
So how do you feel it in your body?
Oh, I think I breathe less. It's almost like the energy from my lower part of my body kind of rises up into my chest and just like gets really tight.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on my journey, right? Getting real tuned in to your body. And it's amazing when you give yourself that gift of connection within yourself.
Yeah.
And you can start to physically feel when things are starting to go sideways. And then that's when you can come in, right, and say, what do I need to do? What can I do later? What can I delegate to someone else?
And the early signs are the body signs, right? So the body is telling us all kinds of things all the time. I use that with my couples also when I'm working with them. What are you noticing early on? What happened before that? And what happened before that? And, oh, I got that feeling in my stomach, or my hands got sweaty, or whatever they are. Having people have those awarenesses early on, I think, goes a long way to keeping us from getting like really, really depleted.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. And you know, when you're talking about getting wrapped up in these things that are popping up, that really resonated with me and my son. I think I'm starting to learn that there was like a codependency there, right? That I made him my focus. How do you, you know, outside of your body, how else can you identify that you need to give yourself some time, some space? You need to push a pause button.
Well, I think the body is the most powerful or potent messenger. Some of it for me is just pure time, you know, like how much time I'm spending talking to the professionals that support this person or whatever. Like, and if other things are getting pushed aside, then that's another indicator.
I think for me, patience. Mm-hmm. When I've lost all patience, mm-hmm. I know. You know, when I'm angry at the way the mailman delivered mail, like, there's a problem.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yes. So you're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I'm speaking with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. When we come back, we are going to talk more about communication, how to have successful communication, and where trauma can show up. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand. And today I am here with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. Robin does couples therapy throughout the state of Wisconsin. You can find her and learn more at relationshiptherapymadison.com. So, Robin, you presented at the Circles of Life conference a few weeks ago and really focused on communication, which communication is key in relationships, right? So can you tell me more about what you were talking about and what you wanted to accomplish with the participants there at your presentation?
Yeah, of course. The title of the workshop was Creating More Peaceful and Satisfying Conversations with Your Spouse or Partner. And what we did was we covered two kind of areas. One was, you know, helping people reflect on, you know, what is making the conversations difficult? And I dovetailed this into kind of a crowdsourcing thing that I did on Facebook, which asked people also, like, what gets in the way? Like, what are the things that are making it difficult? And often we're not sure about what they are. We're not thinking about what they are. But when we start to think about them, we uncover a few different areas. And I covered all of these. One is, you know, am I ready to have a conversation myself? Is it a good time? Am I resourced? Have I thought enough about it? And then some key ones are, is my heart open and is my mind open? Then we want to talk about, you know, when these conversations occur. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, we were getting out the door in the morning, or it was at night and we needed to wait till the kids were asleep, but we were so tired, right? So you can see how time and space can change like the possibility of success, or enhance or detract from the possibility of success.
Yes, I remember talking about that in the past, and it seems so obvious, right? But so many of us don't do it. You know, am I rested? Am I hungry? Am I tired? If you're going to have these big conversations, you want to be prepared. Mm-hmm. So totally makes sense. What else came up?
Whether or not this is a conversation that needs to have focus, you know, can we both be moving? People on my Facebook crowdsourcing talked about how driving in the car together was a really good situation to talk, because it's quiet. And in this case, I think they were either alone or, you know, had quiet time, as opposed to, you know, passing each other, you know, making the lunches, whatever's going on. So the time and the space around that and the environment, you know, what is it noisy? Is it quiet? Are we focused? So setting the stage as well.
That is great advice, because there are so many times where I started to have a conversation with my husband at such an inappropriate time. You know, I was ready. He was in the middle of something. So right. It didn't make sense. I could not imagine having a conversation with him in the car, mostly because I'm holding on for dear life. But for others, it probably works out well. What else came up? Were those the two big things, or was there more?
I was just thinking about that. Yeah, you're right. I mean, the car thing is really specific, but for some reason, a couple people brought that up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? My husband and I never are in the same car. I don't know. It's so weird. We like meet each other places. So very, very rarely. And I was in the car with him once for just a short amount of time. And I thought, well, this is nice. Like, this is good. This is good quality time. Yeah. I personally would struggle with the, you know, having a meaningful, deep conversation, mm-hmm. but not to say, hey, it doesn't work for other people, but it is a good time. You know, we've kind of lost track of the old Sunday drive. I don't know if that's a familiar term to you, but my grandparents absolutely did it. They went for their Sunday drive.
Yeah. Well, a meaningful conversation may not be a highly emotional conversation. A meaningful conversation could be, we've been wanting to talk about this vacation and what's on your list. Like, so there's different ways of having, or different sort of topic areas. So
right.
That's not necessarily that we're going to have maybe a heart to heart where we want to be looking at each other in the car, but there may be like more complex issues about, you know, family planning or like, you know, just calendar,
yeah.
You know, just projects and things like that. So,
that's,
you know, I'm all for people looking in their eyes, you know, looking in eyes or having the capacity to look in your eyes when you're talking. But there are some things that when necessarily need that. So you bring up something really important, which is I might be ready to have a conversation and I might be really gung-ho about it. But that doesn't mean that my partner is ready at the same time, either because they're busy in the moment or they're thinking of something, you know, they don't look busy, but maybe they're not ready. So I would recommend, or I do recommend, like, tell your partner, hey, I would like to talk about this. What do you think? Is this a good time? And you need to give them the topic, right? It can't just be like, I have something important to talk about. I don't know what raises anxiety more
right.
than that, to have your partner just say it's important. So you're going to give them the topic and say, I've been thinking about this. And they might be like, you know, I'm not doing anything right now, but you know what? I'm not ready to talk about that. I hadn't even thought about it, you know, and the background in my head might be, I've been thinking about this for 2 weeks, but I'm just now bringing it to them. So we want to make sure that both people are ready in all ways, right? Time, space, open heart, open mind, all of that.
How do you respect that person's wishes? Because you're right, there are so many things that I've been thinking about for weeks, and then I, you know, I lay it on my husband and I totally catch him out of the blue, and he's not prepared and the timing's not right, and it all falls flat, and quite frankly, most likely ends up in an argument.
Correct.
But also, I can tell my husband, hey, we've got this big thing we've need to talk about. And get the not now. So how do you make those conversations happen and still be respectful of giving the person the time and space that they need to wrap their head around it?
Well, in an ideal world, you know, you would start the conversation the way you said, you know, like, I'd like to talk about this. Is this a good time, or can we find a good time? And the person that's hearing that will not just say no, but that they will be in agreement before this, that this is an important way to communicate, right? So we have to have some agreement about what we're doing. And if we do have an agreement about it, then the response would have some version of, here's an alternate time. How does that sound? So that they, it's kind of like, I think of the game Hot Potato, right? If you give your partner the hot potato, like, I want to talk about this topic, they can't just hold it and not do anything with it, right? We want them to hopefully feel committed to caring about what we're saying and being willing to come back with a response about what, you know, working out when it might work.
That makes total sense. What else was covered? What else were you able to share?
Right. So once we have the whole setup working and then we're ready to talk about the conversation, people have said things like, well, I don't know how to start. Like, I don't know what to say. So we talked about how we start these things and when they might happen. So for example, we might be having a conversation where we want to share like a whole new plan that our partner doesn't know anything about. Or we might want to say, hey, that thing that happened yesterday really upset me. I want to talk to you about that. Or it might be that I noticed that we said we were going to do thus and such. We had an agreement and I noticed it's not happening. That could be a we thing where that the other person's not doing what they said. So there's all kinds of ways to do what Gottman's would call a soft startup. I'm not sure they would use this exact language, but that concept is a really good one, this idea of how we approach our partner in a way that we hope that they can hear us. So for the one where our partner might have agreed to something, it might be, you know, I recall that we had this agreement that we were both going to, you know, clean the house together at, you know, after we had breakfast. And I noticed that, you know, you weren't doing that. And I'm just wondering what's happening because, you know, I want to count on your word and I would like to think that we're in this together. So that's just kind of a flavor of it.
You know what? Well, first let me tell listeners that I am speaking with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. You can work with Robin and learn more at relationshiptherapymadison.com. As you were talking, I just had this thought that kept going through my mind, and I'm gonna throw it out there and maybe get some free therapy here. I don't know. It's just a thought of, I'm thinking in my own personal situation, there's actually two. One, you said the accountability piece, and how do you hold somebody accountable without that turning ugly? You know, people can get defensive. People can take that personally. So how do you have those tough conversations when one partner isn't showing up or isn't doing what they said? And it needs to be addressed.
So first of all, I work under the premise that we cannot change anybody else, right? So even as I'm working with couples, they can't change each other. Everyone has to make the decision they want to try something new or different. So in that case, I think the most powerful way that we can communicate to our partner is by sharing our own experience. You know, when you say that you're going to do these things and you don't show up, a little bit of my heart breaks every time. I so want to count on you, and I start to wonder what's happening with you or with us when you don't keep your word, you know, and I really slow it down. And you notice my voice is slower. I really slow it down. And then I go as far as asking the partner to simply reflect that back. So what you're saying is that when I don't meet up with you to do this thing that we planned, it makes part of your heartbreak that you feel disappointed and you start to wonder how I'm feeling about maybe our relationship or something.
Sure.
Right.
And you're right. Slow it down and tone, right? Because I can say everything you said in a much different tone,
right,
and it would come
right
sound much differently than the nice, calm way that you put it. So if you're going to have that tough conversation, check in with yourself first. Yes.
So the premise under that might be to ask ourselves, what's the purpose of the conversation, right? If we're hurt, we might want to display anger. It feels more powerful. You know, we're really upset and we start to, you see my hands and my fists.
Right.
We start to want to be like pushed back hard. If we want to let our partner know that we think they're wrong, that's a really good strategy. But if we want to let our partner understand our vulnerability and how much we care and what the heartache might be and the longing associated with that, the conversation can be really different. It's not without risk and courage, right, to be vulnerable, but it is a conscious choice, or I hope it's a conscious choice.
Right. Well, and it beats the alternative, because the anger and the resentment and yelling surely isn't going to get you anywhere.
Right.
The other thing that was coming up for me And we're going to talk about trauma a little bit more shortly. And I think that's part of my reasoning behind why I struggle with this. But there's a lot of conversations with my husband that I don't want to, that I don't want to have. Like, I'm not a person that speaks up, right? Yeah. So for those that, that struggle with that, what is a good first step for those that are constantly biting their tongue, that just don't say anything, that don't want to ruffle, you know, whatever, or get in an argument or whatever it may be?
Right. So avoiding them is very, very common, because why would we want to repeat something that felt really badly like last time?
Right.
I think that getting really ready personally, like, am I ready? Can I be calm? Am I willing to share my heart? And that's our approach. Like, that changes what the nature of the conversation is. And at that point, it's not even about having a certain outcome of the conversation. It's like, just start with how I'm showing up.
I like that, that be ready yourself. And I think there's times where I do that. And this may be slightly different, but what I've been guilty of is, okay, I'm going to have this conversation. This is how it's going to go. I'm going to say this, and he's going to say this. And you know, whatever, I've got it played out. And then out of the gate, it doesn't go like that. And then that's where, like, the anger comes in, or the whatever comes in. Could you speak to that at all?
I think at any given moment, navigating our own impulses is the challenge, right? And also the opportunity. So if it doesn't go the way we wanted, you know, I think, again, slowing down is the first thing. What's going on for me? So even in the middle of a conversation, I might, if I have my wherewithal, which may not always be the case, ideally I might say something like, I'm noticing that, you know, your voice is really loud and my voice is really loud. And if I think about it, you know, I'm starting to feel really sad, and I'm just wondering, can we just take a pause and think about, like, what we really want to talk about next?
Oh, be able to talk, take a pause. I want to talk more about that after this short break. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver, and I'm speaking with Robin Schnitzler from Relationship Therapy of Madison. When we come back, we're going to learn about how to ask for that pause and how trauma can show up in relationships. You're listening to The Empowered Caregiver Show, and I am your host, Eliza Hellenbrand. I'm speaking with Robin Schnitzler today from Relationship Therapy of Madison. Robin is currently accepting clients, and I know that that has got to be great news to many, because finding therapists and good therapists can be really difficult. So to learn more, go to relationshiptherapymadison.com, and you can find all of Robin's information there. So Robin, before break, we were talking about taking a pause and asking for a pause. And I feel like I'm a person that needs that a lot. And it drives my husband, quite frankly, nuts sometimes. Like, he will literally chase me around the house, keep on talking, and I'm like, I've pushed pause. How do you make the pause button work?
Right. So before, we talked about this idea that things that work in the moment work best when we have a conversation about how they're going to work outside of that, right? So I'm not saying that this can happen in those moments that you want the pause, but having a separate conversation that says, hey, you know, I've noticed that it doesn't work when we just keep going. And I would like to have some agreement with you that either one of us can pause, and we can agree to reconvene at a time, which usually helps the person who doesn't want to pause to know when we're reconvening. And we'll talk about that in a second. But this idea that that's a common scenario where one person follows another person. It happens a lot. And so how do we help the person? So aside from having that conversation where we're creating a structure where it's okay to have a pause, how do we help that person in the moment, the one that wants to chase? Well, that person's probably got some regulation challenges, right? Like, they're feeling some sense of anxiety and urgency. If we don't solve this now, it's going to feel whatever it is. And there may be a whole history there that they may want to go into, you know, through their own exploration. But in that moment, some strategies can include breathing or reminding yourself that your partner does care about you and that this is not a rejection. Some partners make agreements that when I make a pause, I will give you some affirmation in that moment. That's a little tricky because we're in a heightened state. But, you know, some people will say, I need to take a pause. I still care about you very much. I need a half an hour, right? So you can design that pause and that conversation you have outside of the need.
And that really goes back to the body awareness part, like on both people's mm-hmm. ends, right? You know, for my personal circumstance, I can see my husband becoming dysregulated and mm-hmm. anxiety. And like you said, now. Mm-hmm. And I have the opposite personality. You know, I want to withdraw. I feel overwhelmed. I want to run in the opposite direction. So we're opposite in that way. But I think just getting that awareness.
Right. And it's common that we are with someone that's opposite. Like that's how these patterns work. And helping the person who wants to keep going by giving them a return date, right? There's I think Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back, right? So this idea that the person knows that we'll be back.
I'll be back.
Now, let me say more about that because I wanted to mention that. This idea that you don't necessarily have to be ready to talk at that time, but you have to keep your word and come back and say, I remember we said we were going to talk now. Right. I need another half an hour. You know, so you always keep your word.
Keep your word. Otherwise, it's not going to work next time, right? You've shown that you don't keep your word. So Keep your word. Got to mention trauma. I shared with you earlier that it's such a buzzword. I'm such on the bandwagon of exploration and figuring it all out. How does trauma, past trauma, show up in relationships?
Well, that was a really good example, right? Because In the sort of the ideal world, if I'm feeling some level of anxiety, I'm going to take care of it myself. I'm not going to necessarily put it on my partner, you know, in the way we just described. So anytime that we have a big response that an outsider might think, oh, I wonder why that happened. That seems kind of big. It's typically from something in the past. And we do work with that in couples therapy to some degree, because I think the couples want to know that that reaction is really not about them. Right. So we want to remind people that a lot of times these things are not meant to be directed at the partner, but they're sort of antagonized. Like they come up in that relationship, but the work to figure it out, to learn how to stay regulated, to get whatever insight and awareness is on the individual.
That's individual work. But mm-hmm. I would think that it has to be so helpful when your husband or wife or partner, you know, when they get triggered, when things set them off, for me, you know, if I was to know where that came from, you know, where in that my husband's, for my example's childhood or life experience, mm-hmm. it just brings clarity and it kind of diffuses the situation because now it's not me. It's something that he finds himself dealing with kind of over and over and right and can be triggered by.
Right. And sometimes it can take some time for that to happen, but just even the idea of it can start to open up some compassion and also depersonalize it. So when I work through these things with couples, I may turn to the partner who has been on the receiving end and say, can you see how that's not really about you? And it's so opening for them. It helps.
I think it totally helps because there are so many different things that trigger my husband. And I've kind of been able to look back and say, you know what, given his childhood and some of the things that he's had to deal with, that would make sense. That would make sense. And then you're right. It opens up for compassion and, you know, it's not me versus him anymore.
There's one other piece that can help with some of these conflicts and couples design these on themselves or not. You know, sometimes a touch makes a big difference, you know, so you're having this hard, difficult conversation and maybe it's time for a pause and it can make all the difference in the world to some couples to put your hand on your shoulder, to touch hands, you know, and remind them like, I care about you with words or without words. So again, it's sort of personal about which ones are triggering, which ones are helpful.
I know we don't have that much time, but touch it could be a big topic, right?
Oh, yeah.
It can be extremely helpful. And again, I shared, I'm a retreater. I'm a runner. I'm out. I don't always like to be touched.
Yeah.
And
That's why I was talking about how each couple should design these, because you don't want to be guessing in the moment.
Yeah, you've got to talk about it, because for my husband, it can be really hurtful for him. And he's somebody that calms him, right? Yeah. To me, it's more dysregulating.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Fair enough.
So, anything that you want to add to how you have that conversation, or is it just something you sit down when you're both rested, neutral, you've made the time, and you, let's talk about touch.
Well, touch specifically, or any of these patterns, right? So we started the topic around, you know, systems, and, you know, a lot of times I'm mapping out what the conversation, the dynamic is, and what really started when, and so sometimes support is just really helpful. Sometimes we can do that as our own on a couple, and sometimes having outside support can help.
Robin, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure having you on the show. If you would like to work with Robin, go to relationshiptherapymadison.com.